Hello, friend. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. Today's episode is a special one. And the reason I say that is because when I started doing this podcast, I had the intention to create deep and profound conversations that would inspire people, that would lead to a more conscious and connected collective, to bring us a little bit closer together through vulnerability and shared insights. And today's guest is my friend Padilla, who is a street artist based out of Los Angeles. And she is one of the most inspiring and talented humans that I have ever met. Her story is unbelievable, truly. Her childhood was one of the most traumatic possible. She has gone through just an insane amount of trauma and abuse in her life. And she has come out the other side of that to use her trauma as a treasure. She's turned all of that pain into fuel, and her perspective on life is so incredibly empowering. And the work that she puts out in the world is unbelievably beautiful and amazing, and I just adore her. In this episode, she essentially rips her heart out of her chest and just throws it into the microphone. The result is an episode in which you will feel things. You will see things through a different perspective. By overcoming what she has and turning it into something beautiful, Padilla invites us all to do the same. And I encourage you to start. I encourage you to try. And if you need help, ask for it. There is no shame in seeking help, in going to therapy, in admitting your open and honest feelings to those who care about you. Sharing weakness is a sign of strength. And without further ado, I present Padilla. Enjoy.
Tell your story. I'll choke. Like, okay. I need little bites. Okay. At least at first.
Yeah.
Like.
And then you'll get into the feast.
And then.
And the floodgates will
and
open.
And then once I got nerves calm down, I'll start talking. Then I can connect thoughts. But in the beginning, it's like little questions and little things are easier.
Yeah.
The door is opening itself behind you.
What would be like the a question to start? A good one.
I don't know.
So, how was your childhood?
not that question. I don't know. I guess it would have to be like the reason why you're even asking me.
To be here?
No, to be... Why would you start a podcast asking someone that?
Usually I just start podcasts with like conversation and just see wherever the hell they lead.
Oh, okay.
But just because I know you so well and I have heard your stories.
Yeah.
And I know that... You've come from such a dark, crazy place.
Yeah.
That sharing that path and what you've turned that into is hugely inspiring and will reach and connect with a lot of people.
Okay.
That's my thoughts, but like, I don't mind being right or wrong if you don't want to talk about any of that.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I just don't know how to lead into it.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
But that's cool.
We'll just see where it goes.
Okay.
I'm not stressed.
Yeah.
Or we can just start with your art.
Let's start with whatever.
I think we should just start.
Let's just start.
Let's just fucking start.
Let's do it.
And then we'll just see where it goes.
That sounds good.
Do you want me to use your last name or is it top secret?
I just really use the first name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Like Cher.
Right. We don't need like...
Or Prince.
Johnson after that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. Well, Padilla, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jer.
Let's totally have a conversation about who knows what.
Excellent.
But, so I always start with this as well. So for people that don't know you, or who you are, or what the heck you do.
Yeah.
Like, what's your deal? What are you passionate about?
Oh, good question. Well, I'm an artist. I do contemporary art. I do... a lot of street art here in LA.
What does that mean, street art, for people that are like, what street? Are you a graffiti tag buildings?
Well, I do stuff on buildings, not always legally, but I wouldn't call it graph because that's typically more like lettering, writing words and stuff. The stuff that I do, I think of as psychological commentary. So it kind of talks about things that are like part of our interior human landscape. Perspectives that I kind of challenge the way we commonly think about things to help people sort of get to a better place or feel hope or feel inspired. And so I put stuff out on the street, and then I make, you know, fine art pieces out of it, like canvases, and I do apparel, and I write, and I do little videos and stuff. So it's not just limited to art, it's just anything creative, really.
How'd you get started being on the streets? I don't know how to phrase that. I sound like such a...
That sounds a little...
50-year-old, like, accountant. So how did you do your arts on the streets there, Padilla?
I did my arts on the streets.
Yeah. Maybe we can work backwards, because your stuff has been in galleries. You sell big canvases with beautiful images to collectors, and you make all kinds of cool shit.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, it's funny because I moved to LA about 10 years ago, like walked away from my entire life, abusive marriage, just life that wasn't working on so many levels. It just felt like I was badly photoshopped into it. And I was like, well, it's kind of that crossroads of either accept this is my life and make peace with it and settle into it somehow, or like give it all up and chase the dream. And so I went for it. But I thought that my dream was to work in film, in special effects, because I always had this sense of these things that I wanted to create, like really big, you know, just like having this massive impact and large scale and all this stuff. And so my like little human brain, you know, trying to make sense of this calling is like, oh, you want to see your work on a large screen in a movie theater, you know, so... I moved here, and I went back to school for special effects, and then realized that was not what it was about really at all. It was just about what happened was I had this secret blog also that was kind of about. Talked about depression and anxiety and things like that topic, but in a way where they're part of the human experience, not in terms of like, oh, it's a mental illness that some people have, but sort of dissected them on a deeper level. And the blog started getting a lot of traction, and I started creating art out of it. And at the same time, living in LA, I was introduced to the street art culture that's here, which is amazing. And I started to just really come to life every time I thought about, wow, what an amazing way to kind of take these messages that I want people to hear and kind of just put them out there and leave it up to the universe, like who discovers them. I think there's like magic in that. And then that, at the same time of being in school and realizing what working in film meant, which was like, you know, 14 hours a day in a dark cave on a computer, working on someone else's dream, it just didn't seem like the life that I was meant for.
It's wild, right, that your dreams can just change?
I know, it's amazing how different the dream is, but it's the same. It's like that same urge to create on a large scale and have some kind of an impact. So when I think about it, it's actually exactly the same. My brain was just translating it wrong because it didn't know.
Right.
So that fascinates me.
Because the, like who you are back then, you were limiting yourself by your own belief systems and experiences. Like, you've never had an experience with street art in Hollywood and doing a billboard with your own art. So your brain, like, literally couldn't even go to that place.
It had no information.
It lacked data.
It lacked the circuitry and the data. And so it made up the best thing that it could think of, which is so cute. And it was so wrong.
It's crazy.
But it was also so right, you know?
Because we do this now.
Yeah.
Well, you're in the same position then. Like, what you think is big and exciting now, you also are lacking data.
Yeah. That's why you have to just really practice trying to go with the feeling of the calling or the knowing without trying to figure out the detail too much. Just follow it, and it will reveal itself to you. The more you try to think about it, the more I think you end up in a situation that you really don't belong in, and you can't figure out why.
How do you do that?
How do you do what?
How do you, like, trust the feeling and not overthink it?
It's taken a lot of years of practice. It's really difficult at first, and it involves losing a lot of people in your life sometimes, being called horrible names, possible interventions, feeling like you've lost your mind and are possibly insane. But I think in the end, I don't know, I try to look at my life. This is weird. I hope this makes sense outside of my own head, but from the end, like, in my time of dying, what was the story that I would have wanted to live, and which choice was more interesting towards that story, rather than which is going to necessarily translate to the most logical choice in this moment. We should put a disclaimer in not to ever take my advice.
Well, I mean, it's worked out.
No, it has worked out. It's worked out. For me, it's been the way to live my way into a happiness that I always, no matter how much I had suffered in my life, had a deep sense of. And that really was the only way that I was able to get there, by not using logic and not using judgment, but just following that knowing. I have a friend who she's actually a hypnotherapist, and she said something really interesting once about how animals have this instinct, like, they just know where to go. It could be thousands of miles away, and they have no map, and they have no, like, instruction guide, but they know where to go to get what they need. And I think that people have that too, but our mind completely blocks it because it doesn't make any sense at the time. But the more you can remember that we have that intelligence and follow it, I think, well, you'll have a more interesting story, but I think you'll also end up in happiness.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of looking back at your life and reflecting and trying to decide, like, what do I want my life to be? Like, do I want stories? Do I want adventure?
Yeah.
Like, I want a life that makes me smile and that feels terrifying and adventurous.
Yeah. And where there's nothing left to wonder, like, what would have happened? And it's something I really value is that it's colorful. It doesn't matter if it's painful, as long as it's colorful, that's what has value to me in terms of, like, crafting this story.
Like, what does colorful mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of things, but, like, off the top of my head, it is, you know how some people are just, you might judge them as, like, not great people or in a certain way, but they're really just colorful. They're full of all the colors of the spectrum. They're not just, like, the safe colors.
Just not baby blue.
And they're not just, like, the pinks and the oranges. Like, there's some there's some darker shades in there.
I was thinking about this morning, actually, of that instead of pursuing happiness, we should be pursuing wholeness.
I like that.
Like, I don't want just the happiness. I don't want just the bright yellows and the bright oranges. Like, give me the deep purple, griefy heartache colors.
Yeah.
Like, I want all of it.
Yeah, that's what's real. I mean, even, like, if you look at a piece of grass up close. You can see all the colors in it. And so when you find a person that's just presenting certain colors to you, like, it's kind of, I don't know how to deal with it. Yeah, I like people that are just like, blah, here's my
because you kind of know, you kind of know that it's not the whole story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you do. It makes me anxious. Like,
we all have our deep purples and our midnight blacks, right?
Yeah. It makes me anxious because it's like, well, why are you hiding it? Is it really that
Or just
bad?
Just who are you?
Who are you?
I know you're just not all yellow all the time.
Yeah.
That can't be the case.
Yeah, I know. I admire people like that who are not afraid to show the full spectrum of who they are.
But I feel like you're one of those people.
Thanks.
You're welcome. That's partially why I'm sitting here, because I feel like I really know you.
I love that. I just had a moment when you said that, because I remember before I moved here, just sort of realizing that, okay, I had this a lot of hatred towards myself, and I realized that it wasn't actually that I hated myself. It was that, like, what was I? I had no opinions. I never showed anyone my truth or my suffering. I didn't even really know what my truth was. I didn't stand for anything. Like, I don't know. I felt like kind of like a tin can just tied to someone's bumper, you know, like just getting dragged through life.
Yeah.
And so to all these years later to be sitting here with someone who sees me in a different way, that means a lot to me. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've said a few things I wanted to ask more about. So one was, you left an unhappy marriage. You moved literally across the country to chase a dream.
Yeah.
So can you unpack some of that? Like, what? How did you get to a place where you finally decided, fuck it, I'm going?
Whoa. What happened? Okay. I gotta, like...
Let's rewind the tape.
Yeah, I'm trying. It's stuttering. It's like some smoke coming out. okay. What happened was, I'm trying to figure out how far back in the story to start, because it kind of connects back and back and back. So where to start? I basically had spent 12 years really heavily medicated on antidepressants, and in the process of coming off of those and really digging in and working on myself and figuring out what was at the root of that depression, I realized that I had all of the circumstances that I had created in my adult life were like the crime scene photos of what I grew up in. And the second I realized that, I was like, holy shit, I don't know how to get out of this. I don't know how not to recreate this, but this is not good enough. I've said to myself, like, I'm not going to let you live this life anymore. This is painful, and I'm gonna find a way to get you out of here and build something different. In the relationship that I was in, you know, I talked to him about all of this, and a lot went on. I didn't just like walk out the door, but it became very obvious that he was not interested, or at the time capable of, or wanting to change, which is fine. You know, he was happy with who he was and how he was and the kinds of relationships that the way he did relationships and friendships. And that was, it's not my place to judge, but I couldn't live in it. And I've always felt like I had these things within me that I wanted to unpack into the world, something to create, all of these things to create, and I knew I would never be able to do it if I lived in an environment where I was continually triggered into this anxious, depressed state. So, so I got out of there.
So you decided to be the hero to your own suffering.
Yeah, exactly. I had a lot. It was a hard time. I remember a lot of feelings like that. Like, wow, I wish someone would just come in. Like, I was thinking of that image
Save
of Operation Dumbo Drop with the chopper with the elephant. You know, like, that was me. Like, lift me out of here.
Yeah.
And
how long did that go on for, where you were kind of debating or feeling anxious or scared to make a move?
Probably a little over a year. I would wake up at like 4 a.m. every single night just feeling this extreme vertigo, like I was just about to jump out of an airplane. I was terrified. I had no, especially because all of the kind of the mental stability that I had at the time was so new. So I didn't trust it. I didn't even trust myself.
The mental stability.
Yeah, it was new, and I didn't have any confidence in my ability to make sound decisions or build a life for myself or anything. Like I had no knowing at all that I would be okay, but also a very deep knowing that I would be okay. So it was a total mind fuck. Just like all of life.
Yeah. How do you navigate that then? Because like the way I describe it to myself and to other people is the classic like heart versus the head. So the heart whispers and the fear shouts, and the heart's saying, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's all good. We got this. I know this is supposed to happen this way. And
yeah.
Then the brain's like, we will die.
We will die.
Don't do this. You're
yes.
crazy. You're wrong. You're an idiot.
I
this is impossible.
That.
And that's just in our own heads.
Yeah.
That doesn't even take into account the friends, family, husbands.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who all have their own insights, right?
They sure did. I like that you called them insights. That was very kind of you. Yes, they had a lot of insights.
Or opinions, right?
Yeah, and it just came down to what we were just talking about, which is which version of the story is more interesting from the end or from an outside perspective. The person that is like, oh, I can't do this, which is totally forgivable. It was the most overwhelming thing in the world, you know, and just like figures out a way to stay in the situation and cope with it. Or the person that takes the leap, like that's a story. And that was part of the thing at the time. I remember thinking, now it's coming back to me more, but like, I remember thinking, this is one of the thoughts before I left, like if this story was a book, I would not want to read even one more page. This is such a cliche, like person grows up with this ridiculous traumatic childhood, builds it in their life, and then settles into misery, the end. That's not the story that I want to go down with. That's not it. I want to be proof of something else or die trying. And so I guess that was the ultimate empowering thought, was like, yeah, I feel like I'm gonna die, and if I do, it's still a more noble death than staying in this life that's just I didn't build with any intention. It was just it's just what built itself around me as a result of my depression and low self-esteem.
Totally.
Yeah,
good for you.
Thanks, Jer.
And like now we're surrounded by beautiful flowers and art.
It's so happy in here, isn't it? Yeah.
You would have never predicted this.
No.
At the time, I could have shown up like the ghost of Christmas future.
I wish you had,
and
man.
Said,
I needed you.
And said,
where were you? You fuck.
I let you down. I was in college.
You suck.
I was doing shit.
Yeah.
I could have said to you, Padilla, come with me. And you will have your art in the finest galleries in Los Angeles, and you'll be collaborating with rock stars, and people will give you thousands of dollars to make them things for their houses, and you'll have a, I don't know how much you want to talk about, but you're doing some really cool stuff. And you would have heard that, and you would have been like, bro, you're a lunatic. Get out of here.
You know
that's
what?
Impossible.
You know what? I would listen to you.
Really? You'd yeah. be like, please, anything. Get me out of here.
Anything. 1 ounce of something to believe in. Yeah. No, that's
But I think the most really inspiring cool. part of that, for me at least, is that you saved yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you got tired of the old story. You decided that there had to be some other way to live, even if you had no idea what that was.
Yeah.
And you were brave enough to be like, I'm gone. Leaving this comfortable chaos behind.
Yeah.
Leaving behind everything that was keeping you in that spot. And you left.
Yeah. I think the pain of wondering would have been too great. What happened after I left, it was very difficult. It wasn't like an overnight success story at all. But whatever pain I've gone through afterwards, the pain of always wondering would have been far more great. And it's the most incredible feeling to wake up in the morning. And one of my first thoughts is always like I can't explain. It's actually a physical feeling. Like, I feel like my heart stops and I can't breathe, but in a good way, because I'm like, oh, I'm living inside my dream. Like, I'm living inside this knowing that I had for so many years that felt like a delusion, you know, and that I was told by so many people, doctors and that kind of thing, you know, that just wasn't possible for someone like me. So it feels very surreal, but very beautiful.
I think that's one reason I wanted to have this conversation with you, is because you're somebody who you've turned dreams into memories, first of all. You've turned dreams into reality, and you had educated medical professionals for years telling you that's impossible people like you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. For over 12 years. I mean, you wouldn't believe the things that doctors have told me. The last thing a psychiatrist ever said to me, because I never went back to one. And I just want to say something here, just to be responsible. Like, hold that thought. I'm going to come back to it. Okay. But, you know, if you are on medication, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think it's necessary sometimes to get yourself to a place where you can do the work and get help. I'm not bashing it at all. I'm not judging it at all. I just, for me, my issues were a result of kind of what I grew up in, and I had a lot of work that I needed to do, and what happened to me when I went to doctors was that I was just put on medication and told that was going to be my life. And I just want to say, don't get off your meds. It's dangerous. You need a lot of support around you, and
Doctors know what they're doing. Listen to
yeah,
them.
Yeah. I'm not trying to sit here and like bash that and get people to stop taking their meds. It's very dangerous. Don't do that. But I am angry about it. So you will hear that come out. But yeah. So the last psychiatrist that I ever went to, who was kind of my hope, like he was a younger guy. He had like this, he kind of reminded me of you. He had like a shell necklace and like the hair back and like this cool vibe. And I was like, this guy is gonna see that I'm not broken. He's gonna have the insight that's gonna set me free, you know. And I was like running on fumes at this point. I was so suicidal and just at the end, and didn't realize how much hope I actually had walking into that office until he took it away by saying that he didn't think that my problem was depression. That was definitely an issue, but he thought that the underlying problem was that I suffered from a rare form of bipolar, where instead of cycling from high to low, I cycle from low to lower. And I was like, but I started tapering down off all of these meds that were really messing with my mind, and I started to feel a little bit better. Like, do you think that maybe I could just get off of it and see how, you know, whatever? And he's like, no, I think you're just not on enough medication. I think we need to add another one in, and we need to add this other type of medication in that's like a mood stabilizer and just will completely knock out all of your, basically like your, I forget how he phrased it, but like your cycles of feelings or whatever. And so, in that moment, I was just like, I went into total darkness. Like, I had no hope. Like, you can't spend 10, 15 years being told that you have a handicap and that the problem is that you have these big dreams and they cause you stress and you need to scale back and, like, you know, get a little part-time job, like stop trying to have a career. And I'd love to sit down one day and just make a list of all the things that doctors have said to me, and then I don't know, make a video of my life now and send it to them or something.
You should put it in your book.
Yeah, I know, send them a copy of my book.
Yeah,
like, hey guys.
Fuck you.
Fuck you. Fuck you. It's like, you just, what bothers me is that they discounted the human spirit and the ability that we all have to heal and grow and change and overcome. And they are not, generally, I'm sure there's exceptions, I didn't personally know any, but they're not helping anyone to get to a place where they become a hero of their own story. And isn't that what life should be? Why else are we here? To just serve out a living death sentence? Like, that's how I felt every time I was told what my limitations are.
So what was rock bottom like for you at that time?
At that time? So after, it was actually right after that, I decided, like, I had been severely suicidal probably since I was like 6 or 7, since I even knew that was a thing. It was just something that was, I thought about it all day long. It was kind of my escape, like smoking a cigarette or something. I just fantasize about death constantly. But I had never actually tried, because along with that, there was this sense of this other life, of this other existence. And but after leaving that doctor's office, I decided that I was going to end my life. And I, but it, not in a rash way, not like in a just, oh, I'm just going to kill myself. Like, I actually planned it out and was like making peace with letting go of all the attachments that I had on earth and stuff. And because I had spent so long doing everything that the doctor said and trying to get better and trying to build a life for myself and trying to be whatever I felt was my version of a decent person, and it just wasn't working, you know. That was like a long enough time to try. And so that was the bottom, I think, at that point, after all those years of trying and failing to kind of right myself, you know. But that's when shit got really interesting.
Like, plot twist or what?
There's a major plot twist. Yeah, because in that darkness, at the lowest point of my life, I let go of every single thing that I was attached to and loved and everything. And then I realized there was only one thing that remained, which was this tiny curiosity. It's like, huh, what about that vision, like that knowing of this life, this bright, happy, colorful life where I'm doing well and like flourishing? Like, was that really all just the delusion of a broken mind? Really? Did I just make that up? And then I was like, you know what? Since I was going to kill myself anyway and my life feels worthless, I'm just going to donate it to science. This is going to be my experiment. Was that actually a delusion or was that truth? And so then after that, that's actually when I feel like I began to live, because I set forth on the journey to find that answer. I'm very proud to tell you that it was truth.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I donated my life to science.
So you were in complete rock bottom, planning to end your life, got rid of the attachment to all of your thoughts, ideas, people, and discovered this little tiny spark.
Yeah.
Of curiosity.
Yeah, it was just like that. It was this little twinkle in the darkness. This is one thing I could not let go of.
And then you were like, huh, well, may as well just have one last hurrah and see how it goes.
I could let go of everything except that one curiosity. I couldn't leave this earth without knowing if I had really just...
It was like unfinished business.
It was unfinished business, yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to find the answer to this and then I'll do it.
Real quick.
Real quick.
Yeah. And the way I'm going to find the answer is I'm going to be an artist.
I can't. No, that happened by accident.
Oh.
Or did it? No. Yeah. No, it didn't. Yeah.
So hang on. So you find this idea, you decide, hang on, I'm going to pursue this path.
Yeah.
And then what did you do?
So then I was like, okay, how am I going to find this answer? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Where do I go?
What's required is to upend your whole living experience.
Yeah.
To that point.
And I didn't know how to do that. I didn't have any, at that point, any tools or, you know, like inner resources to know what to do or how to do that. So I thought, well, I've been on all of these medications for so long, I don't even know who I am anymore as an adult. You know, I'd been on them since, like, I don't know, late teens, early 20s. Like, is it possible that and I had heard something somewhere in there about the concept of neuroplasticity, which blew my mind, because I was like, why had no one ever mentioned this to me, that our brain changes with our experience and with learning, and even more interestingly with imagination, it creates new circuits in our brain. So that gave me a little bit of hope, but I thought, you know, maybe I had somehow through my experiences been able to, I don't know, I just felt like I needed to peel all the layers of shit off me, and one of those layers was the medication, because it was suppressing so much. And I just wanted to know what I was dealing with. Like, who was I in there? I had no idea. I'd lost all ability to connect to all the things that are important to a human being. My heart, my spirit, my intuition, my any kind of internal guidance. Like, it was all fogged out. So the only thing that I knew was that that was the next step, and then I could take it from there. And the whole journey was like that. It was like, I have no idea where I'm going, but I can see where my next foot goes 1 inch in front of where it is now. So I'm just going to worry about putting it down there and hopefully end up somewhere, anywhere but here, right?
And that's progress.
Yeah, it was progress. And so it was fascinating because one of the things that was so difficult during all those years was the stagnation and the feeling like I was not getting any going anywhere. I was just recreating the same bullshit over and over. And so now, even though I was, you know, like moving at the speed of snail, I was moving forward. Like I was moving forward for the first time in my life, and that was an incredible feeling.
What did it feel like?
It felt like being alive. I felt like fucking being alive. It was a wild feeling compared to how I'd spent all the years before that.
And so was that your journey then, to just continually look for the next step?
Yeah, exactly. And to and the practice was to not get overwhelmed by bigger picture items. It's just like, well, in this moment, I know this is true and I know to do this. And I can't think any further or I will get so overwhelmed that it will collapse.
Yeah. Or even, I don't know why I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to do this.
Exactly. Without like think.
Moving to California, leaving your husband, going off meds, whatever.
Yeah.
There's this inner whisper that knows.
Yeah.
That you can't reason with.
Exactly. It's, I have such a deep reverence for the intelligence that we have within us, the intelligence that is far beyond what your brain knows. It's pretty astounding. And it pulled me out of something that, you know, countless medical professionals told me was inescapable. And that logically you could look at, if you look at what I grew up in and you go, oh, let's project that into the future. Well, logically, there you go, you know. And
those doctors presumably would have a detailed history of your past and your childhood and your trauma.
That was another thing that I have issue with, is they really didn't get too into it. You know, they didn't want to really get dirty, you know. It's just like 50 minutes, keep it over there, I'm not gonna break a sweat, no, let's not bring that up, you know. It's just like, how can I help you in 50 minutes and then move on. I don't think that most of them invested too much or had too much insight or compassion. That was a turning point, I think, in my healing. Actually, was being diagnosed with PTSD, because that was really what was at the root of what was causing the depression, was the unprocessed trauma. And I really think that is the case for everyone who struggles with depression, is that you've been, it's almost like you have an operating system that's been created as a result of things that you've been through that collapses you instead of lifts you up. It doesn't bring you further into the world, it shuts you down. I don't believe that depression is like a mental illness, that there's just something wrong with your brain. I think it's all a result of the way your operating system was created. And what I've proven through my life is that you can completely deconstruct and reconfigure that to one that brings you forward into your life, rather than living in that stagnation and collapse.
And so when you talked earlier about being 6 or 7 years old and having suicidal thoughts,
yeah,
where does that come from? Like, what kind of childhood are you dealing with?
It was inconvenient.
That's the adjective?
That's the adjective I choose.
It was not ideal?
It was not the best. No, it was the best. It's a really bizarre story. My mother, I don't know what exactly her issue was. She had compound mental illnesses, I would say, like components of schizophrenia, bipolar, narcissistic personality disorder, I don't know, and drug addiction. And so after I was born, she cut herself off from her family and kind of went into isolation. My dad was around, but not really. And basically just grew up in a very isolated environment with her. And she really didn't have the capacity to understand that I was a living being. I'll just put it that way. She really did a lot of inconvenient things, but caused me a lot of pain, extreme pain. And so without getting into too much detail, like to give you some examples, to give you some context, the treatment center that I ended up in later on, that was for trauma, they said that it was like one of the worst cases of abuse that they've ever treated, and really don't know how he survived. And I think it would have been like if it was these days, it would have been if anyone had found me, like front page newspaper. Like it was a gruesome story. And you know, I the ways that it, I'm so glad to have gotten to a point in my life where I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's like priceless treasure to me. I mean, it was so painful, and so many times I thought that it had broken me, but now it just seems like this pile of priceless treasure that I continually extract from. And that's what you have when you metabolize the pain of your story. You're just left with absolute treasure. And I'm really so thrilled to be able to finally say that as my truth, you know?
I feel like that's the major lesson learned, is the perspective shift changes everything, because as you alluded to, what happened to you is one of the worst things that could have happened to a child.
Yeah.
It would have been on the national news.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it has also led to countless thought initiatives and paintings and fuel for your art and turning your pain into passion and purpose, etc.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't trade it for anything. And I think that's such a beautiful place to get to in life, when you can look back at your pain and you've fully excavated the gifts from it, and you're living them to such an extent that where you know that if you had the choice to go through the pain again to get the gifts, that you would have chosen it. And when you get to that point in your life, the story becomes irrelevant. Now yeah. it's almost comical. Like I like that it's so colorful and bizarre.
Will you describe it as inconvenient?
Yeah, it was just like I call my mom a freelancer, you know? She was a prostitute.
Mom? No. Oh,
she's a freelancer. Like I mean,
she was a prostitute, and you call her a freelancer.
I call her a freelancer.
She was an independent consultant.
She was a consultant, yes.
But so just for context, though, when like you say it was inconvenient and you laugh, but can you give like one or two stories or one or two details about what your life actually was like as a child?
Yeah, sure. So my dad was officially out of the picture about the time I was 7. And so before that, things were weird and crazy, but he was – still contributing financially, but then when he left, all that went with him. So we really had no heat in the winter. This is in New York State. For, you know, since the time I was 7, we often didn't have food. The ceilings, the roof of the house collapsed, and then the ceilings collapsed, and so the house was full of raccoons and rats, and just she was also, my mother was also like, she made those people on Extreme Hoarders look like cute, you know. She was like, she took it to a whole other level. So it was just
like,
this,
what do you, like, what would she hoard?
Everything, just garbage, just everything. It was like the house was like something out of a horror movie. There were just lists and lists of things on paper, newspaper clippings, inside plastic bag, inside plastic bag, inside plastic, like hanging from strings with clothespins, like bamboo poles and twine holding parts of the ceiling up. I don't know, just completely insane. And she was really physically ill as well. She had like ulcerative colitis, so she would I'd come home and she'd be like laying in this pool of blood. I mean, just so many. It was really, really rough. It was really rough. She, between her physical illness and her swings of mania and then catatonic states for months on end, and then the highs of the drugs and the people that would be coming in and out of the house that she was associating with. I mean, there weren't many, but they were real characters. And like, I don't know, she just she was colorful.
she was colorful.
But yeah, there was no heat, there was no electricity, there was no food. She would rage for sometimes like 8-10 hours straight, where she wasn't like even in her body, like her eyes would roll into the back of her head and she would just be losing it. And it was all very, it was a very personal attack. Like, she wanted to disintegrate me or completely annihilate me. And you know, basically that just that I had ruined her life and shouldn't have been born. And really, really difficult when it's your only attachment in the world. And I loved my mom so much, you know, and she just, she would swing from being extremely loving to absolutely hating my guts, and I was afraid she would kill me. Like, she, you know, and she would keep me locked up and disappear for days on end. And
locked in the house?
Locked in, either in the car or in a room or in the closet or in this thing that she had. It was just in the darkness, you know. Like, I still do struggle a little bit with, or a lot more than I'd like to admit, with PTSD. Like, I have seizures, and I think being left alone in the dark with no nothing to do, and not knowing if she was coming back, and being confined like that, the silence, like, I can still hear it ringing in my head sometimes. Like, it comes back in weird ways like that, which was why it was difficult to treat, because it wasn't necessarily a flashback per se. It's just like slipping into a state of flashback. So yeah, but she, I mean, there are a lot of really interesting stories. Like, she tried to start this cult, and she would go, we'd go to 7-Eleven, and she, to this day, I know, I could pick out a guy that my mom would target. It's like this little joke I have with myself. I say to myself, oh, you'd be dead right now, buddy. You know, like, she would pick out a very specific kind of guy who had like this, abusive yet inappropriately close relationship with his mom as an adult, and she would like collect them and bring them to the house and like give these fantastical lectures. Like, she was so articulate and brilliant and manipulative when she was like switched on. It was so crazy. But she would get these people to like follow her, and then she would slip into that role of where their mother was, and like they would just give her money and like do all of these, do like the yard work and stuff, and she had like servants, she had followers. It was crazy. I don't know, man.
Inconvenient.
It was inconvenient. I was just trying to play with my toys and be happy.
Yeah, you're trying to be a 7-year-old girl.
Ladies torturing me and like collecting slaves. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had her struggles. She's had a very painful existence, and transferred all of that onto me, because that's what you do when you're in pain and are not self-aware, you know. So yeah, so I left home early. I don't know, I think I was 14, first time I left, and I was like, oh, I'm free, you know, now I can be fine. And then I realized, oh, like, I learned all of this, you know, this is all of her thought processes, or her way of compiling the world. I had taken that on, and I really, because I did go to school, but I was so isolated from society and its institutions and just the common ways that people think. I didn't know anything about that, and all that was within me was the way that she processed things. But the difference was, it felt horrible to me, because it wasn't, it had been installed, but it wasn't really who I was.
You were running a program that wasn't yours.
Yeah, and I could feel it constantly, like, but I didn't know what it was. I was just like, oh, why do I feel like this?
So you knew it wasn't right.
Yeah.
But you didn't know why it was wrong.
I didn't know fuck what to do about it. Yeah. So it's interesting though, because I always thought that my story, it was always this compounded pain associated with it, because I felt like it's what kept me from connecting to people, because no one could relate to it. But what I've discovered in the last few years of doing this art and talking more about it is, it's actually the same thing on a much more severe scale, but like that everybody goes through. I think we all get things installed in our minds and belief systems that are created that don't serve us, that hinder us and hold us back. And I think because in my case it was so severe, like, I'm actually grateful for that, because it's what called me to dissect it and to kind of understand it. It actually gave me a greater understanding of all people and a greater ability to connect to people than I think I would have had if I had never looked at any of that.
It's made you better.
Yeah.
It's like your superpower. I imagine that some kind of, you know, radical compassion or...
Yeah.
Do you have really high self-awareness, would you say, of how you're feeling or how you...
I feel like I do. I feel like I've had to develop that, because I have to have a keen awareness of when all those old depressive or traumatized thought patterns are flaring up.
Like the old programs start running.
You feel it sometimes, and I'm like, ooh.
Gotta stop it now.
No one wants to be my friend down there.
Right. They're not looking out for your best interest.
No.
Right?
No, and it's just incredible with that story and going through all that to be at a place where that's a choice. You know, that was not a choice for so many years, and it's not a choice for so many people who are trapped and suffering. But I think, and that's something that I'm trying to promote with my work, is this idea that you can get there. You can get to that place where happiness is a choice, but it's not just automatically a choice a lot of times, and then that's okay. It doesn't mean you're broken. It just means you have a little journey to go on, friend.
Yeah. Or even if you're not happy, you're still whole. Even when you're broken, you're still whole.
Oh, yeah.
It's broken is just a state of mind that you're deciding
on.
Like, the story I'm telling myself is I'm broken. Like, bullshit.
Right.
You're whole as fuck.
Yeah.
You're a human being that's feeling all the things.
I know. And it's one of the greatest states to be in, actually, because then you have no choice but to reassemble, you know, and look at all these pieces. Oh, that's not working for me. Nope, that doesn't belong in there. And what do I need to build? And there is no such thing as just being beyond hope or being broken. That's, I 100% agree with you. That's some story that I don't know who made up, but it's really not serving us in any way.
And there's so many stories that are the opposite. Like, yours is one, that you came from this haunted mansion with a mentally ill prostitute cult leader.
Freelancer.
Freelance public speaker. And, you know, hit rock bottom. The medical establishment said you will never amount to anything. Your dreams are actually part of your psychosis. Don't dream big.
Yep.
Take these meds. Shut the fuck up. Get a part-time job.
Yep.
And we're in your art studio with your clothing line and a vase full of yellow flowers.
Yep.
Your art is all around us. You're smiling.
Yes.
You wake up every day feeling like you're fucking dreaming.
Yeah.
Like, you're the hero story that people can be inspired by.
I love that. I love that so much. I try to process that, because I've spent so many years in the darkness. I'm trying to understand, like, this is real. And it's the thing that I love about the story, and the reason why I share it, is because there was no magical thing, like, switch that flipped. Like, so you ever read a self-help book and it's like, okay, this is good, and then all of a sudden, like, this thing happened and their whole life changed, and I'm like, listen, that sucks. so I can't do this, because the magic is, you know, it's just but my story,
and even in reality, you only know that looking backwards.
Yeah.
In the moment, you don't actually know that guy that you just met at Starbucks is the one that's going to change your life, or that's true. That business opportunity is going to radically.
Yeah.
You don't know that shit. Right. Like Bill Gates and all those guys, they're just like, I'm supposed to tinker on these machines in this garage. I don't know why, but I'm supposed to just be a dork and play on this device.
Yeah, they were just
start
following
Apple and
that
IBM
calling.
And Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's part of the reason why I hope that this story would give people hope, is because there wasn't that moment of magic. I worked for this. Like, every grueling millimeter of progress.
So when you talk about doing the work, how do you define that? Or what does that mean to you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I did a lot of work. Well, I mean, if I were to do that over again, I think I could do it a lot quicker, because I didn't know what I was doing. And it's hard when you don't know what you're doing and also you're told it's impossible.
It's a double whammy.
Yeah. Things are kind of stacked against
you. You don't know what
you're
doing and you're doing it wrong.
And it's not possible.
And it's impossible what you're doing. That impossible thing you're trying, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But it basically came down to what I was saying before, just feeling into that greater sense of self, following the knowing and then going into, this was the key ingredient, was going into whatever pain was coming up in the moment instead of numbing, coping, denying, just going into it and asking for the message and saying, okay, what is this calling me to do? Do I need to sit in it and feel it and let it rise and bloom so it can die? Do I need to develop greater autonomy over myself by going deeper into different styles of meditation? Do I need professional help? Which is, I'm really happy to say, I don't know if it's because I live in California now or just times are changing, but I feel like there is so much greater help that's available to people now.
What kind of stuff were you referencing? Because previously you disparaged psychiatrists.
Yeah, and they're not my friends. I found a tremendous amount of help at a PTSD treatment center out here, and there's all kinds of, it's called Serenity Trauma Healing in, it's in Malibu now. But the things that they're doing there are really kind of cutting edge, brain spotting, EMDR, which that's actually been around a long time, but somatic experiencing, like understanding where the energy and trauma is stored in your body and releasing it. They're doing all kinds of different modalities, which are now becoming more and more popular, more mainstream, and are infinitely more effective than 50 minutes of talk therapy. Because the thing is that talk therapy is very effective if you had a fight with your boss and you need help working through it. But when you have been disrupted fundamentally and it's like...
And persistently,
yeah. Retelling the story, but only enough that fits into 50 minutes, it's just bringing it back up. And that's not helpful. It's more traumatizing. It's keeping it active, which is already the problem. So a lot of these newer modalities are, you're able to really get in there and do the work without, it kind of... What's interesting too is it's like this process of moving back into your body, of moving back into the spaces where the energy of the trauma is stored, and reclaiming that space and reclaiming that presence within yourself. And then the story becomes just a story. It just becomes a memory. It's no longer a manifestation in the present.
I think too, just to reiterate to someone that's listening right now, admitting that you need help and going out and trying to find it is one of the bravest things you can do.
Absolutely.
That is not a sign of weakness. That is a sign of bravery.
Absolutely. I think that is something that we should all do before anything else, before you... it's like, it's funny, there's such emphasis on like our wardrobe and our aesthetics and like making up our faces and all that. That doesn't mean shit. It's
how do you really feel?
And furthermore,
like we spend so much, countless hours each week at the gym.
Yeah.
Getting our glutes and our biceps to be in shape, and yet we don't take the time to look at how our brains are working, which determines our whole life.
Everything. It's the foundation of everything. It's the foundation of your finances, of your happiness, of your relationships. You can't, and people will be like, oh, I don't have time, or it's expensive. Well, nothing else is relevant, really.
It's the thing.
It's the thing.
Do you have any sort of daily practices that you do to...
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have little practices all day long in the way that I kind of tune in to myself and talk to myself. But my biggest practice is first thing in the morning. Do you ever notice when you wake up, before you remember your story of yourself, there's like this space of nothingness, and it just feels so good. You have no identity. And so I practice stretching that, stretching it. And then I get myself into a meditation. It's a trick because you have to get up or you fall back asleep. But to stay in that space, get up and then start to meditate. And I do this, it's a body scan meditation that I love. It's on a Mind Matters website, and it's called Healing Relaxation. But it takes you through your whole body for about 20 minutes and you just release any of the tension. So for me, it allows me to stretch that space into about 20 minutes. And then I start doing more visualization style meditations. So that's been life-changing for me because it's really allows me to anchor in the story that I want to tell about myself and the story of how I want to feel in the day, how I want to see myself, what I want to believe in life, how I want to project myself into a compelling future. Like all of these things I did not have the skills to do on my own. And so, and then I go out into the day and then I'm like, I'm here, you know, I'm awake. I didn't beat myself awake with caffeine and stress. I rose from within. I'm anchored in feelings and thoughts that I sanction, that I approve of, and that I want to continue for the rest of the day. And just the day is totally different from that starting point.
Mm. It's hero training.
Yeah.
Right? So what's an example of a little thing that you do during the day? You said you have a bunch of little things about how you talk to yourself.
Yeah. It's sort of noticing just moments of when I start. My two things that I slip into easily are feeling overwhelmed or feeling trapped. And so it's catching myself in those moments. And I'll talk to myself in my head, like I would talk to like a soft little animal or a kid. I'm like, okay, you know, this isn't real, right? Let's go outside. I'm going to get you out of here. How about all these other options? You know, like, I'm proud of you. You know, just remember this, like where you were 10 years ago. Look at you. I'm proud of you. And it's really saying things that would probably be sort of embarrassing out loud. But it's the first time in my life I really feel like I'm on my side. And it's replaced all of the screams of my mother and her voice and her way of interacting with me that used to just be the way that I dealt with myself. Yeah. It's completely, I used to really, I think, rule myself in the way that she ruled me, which was with fear and shame. And now it's more about support, inspiration, and love. And having that kind of inner management system really changes things.
Damn. I don't even know where to go from here.
Did I talk too much?
How can you do that in a podcast as the guest?
Why am I sweating?
Yeah, 90 degrees in LA right now. So moving to the present, moving to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that you are writing a book because I lived with you for 2 weeks in the middle of nowhere town.
You did. While you were writing. Did you know that it was Mount Pinos?
Pinos.
Right. Well,
we called it Mount Penis.
We called it Mount Penis. Mount Penis. And I said that probably for 6 months, and someone finally said, "You know, it's Pinos, right?" So
I didn't know that.
I forgot to tell you.
Well,
for a year now,
ruined it on my podcast. I'm so embarrassed.
You've been calling it Penis.
So you've got a book coming out.
Yeah, I've got
you
a book coming out.
You are an artist, a creator. You're on Instagram. Like, what do you? How can people find you?
So my Instagram is unfuckyourself without the C.
Unfuck yourself.
Yes.
Do you want to just Maybe that's a bit random, I imagine, for people to hear that.
It was, that's the story of how you and I met, actually.
Oh, we should tell the origin story.
Yeah. So I started making, this is probably 5 years ago, I started making these t-shirts that said, "Love me anyways." And I wanted to make a sticker to send out with my t-shirts. So I was making these stickers and they were all stupid and I hated them. So I closed my eyes. I was like, all right, what's the, dig deep. What's the truest thing I could say in this moment? So I came up with this sticker and it said, "Unfuck yourself, be who you were before the stuff that dimmed your shine." And I was like, that's dumb and wordy and weird. It doesn't even make sense. So I was like, screw it. I'm going to send it out anyway. This is the sticker. And then, so it ended up going viral and it still is for 5 years now. And that is how I met Dr. Jeremy here. Because <It's true. laughs> he posted it.
I plagiarized you.
Well,
inadvertently.
Inadvertently.
It went, like, when you say it went viral, like, probably if you're listening, you've heard that expression, unfuck yourself, be who you are, that for that thing dimmed your shine. And it went like universally across in Pluto and Neptune, like Everybody was sharing this thing.
It was amazing. It's still going 5 years later.
Yeah, it's awesome. And so I see this thing on the internet and it has no attribution, no author or anything. And I share it on my Facebook page many years ago.
Yeah.
And I forget who it was, but a couple of your little supporter friends are like, "Hey," very sassily to me, "Hey, you know, you're plagiarizing Padilla. Padilla wrote this. Why are you ripping Padilla off?" And I was like, "Excuse me. I just shared a thing from the internet that's gone universally viral. I have no idea who this Padilla person is. I'm sorry." And so I look you up. I look up your page. And, you messaged me. You messaged me this very sweet message that was super polite and said, "Excuse me, kind sir."
Kind? Did I call you that?
No, you didn't. But in my memory, it was like, "Hey, you know, I wrote that. Do you mind giving me credit?" And I was like, "Of course."
I know, you were so nice. Hell, it was shocking. I will. Because most people were like, "Go fuck yourself." So
go fuck yourself.
And you were like, "Of course."
And then I checked out your page and I was immediately impressed. And I remember thinking,
same.
Dang, this chick's fucking cool. And like a badass artist who has created all kinds of cool stuff. And I shared like one or two other things you've done. And then we just became best friends.
BFFs for evs.
So that's the unfuck yourself, which is your Instagram handle.
Yeah, without the C, F-U-K. Yeah, I'm thinking of changing it, but that's what it is for now, and that's where my art is and my writing and stuff, and there's a website too and a Facebook page.
What's the website?
It's the same, unfuckyourself.com, without the C, and the Facebook page as well.
And that's where people can find your art to buy. And so you also, when you say art, how do you describe your art? Because it's like spray paint, street art. Like I'm looking over her shoulder right now. There's a 2-foot spray painted Buddha that's
4 feet.
4 feet. That has his middle finger raised in meditation pose. He's got chains around his neck and tattoos and it says, "Unfuck yourself." And you make sculptures and clothing and you got a book coming out.
I guess it's like, it's kind of got a street art vibe to it. It's contemporary art. Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
I mean, I just think it's awesome.
It's just a stuff.
I think you're one of the most talented and inspiring humans that I've ever met.
That is so nice to hear inside my ears.
Did
Thank you.
Did you receive it?
I did.
I mean that.
Fully.
There's going to be people that listen to this and you will have made a very positive difference in the experience of their life.
I'm so happy to hear that.
I really believe that.
That means that it was all for something. You know, I think about that a lot. It's like I can't get all those years of suffering back, but maybe I can give them to someone else. You know, and that's my motivation in what I'm doing is to be what I needed back then for somebody else.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you have any final thoughts or insights for someone listening that needs to hear something?
I think that was it.
What about just, hey, you're super duper awesome, and life might work out for you.
Life will work out for you. There's a line in my book I will share.
Ooh.
I hope it makes sense out of context. I don't know.
There's only one way to find out.
Okay, well, something to the effect of, the one thing that you can always trust is that a creation is unfolding through you. So all this shit that we go through, it's giving you things. It's helping you form, and it's giving you something to push against, to burst forth from. And I think the greatest thing you can do is really just tap into that deeper knowing within you, that intelligence that we all have. It's not a lie. It's telling you the truth, and it will guide you to exactly where you need to go to unfold into the greatest diameter of presence.
Well said.
Thanks.
Thanks for being such a badass human. I appreciate your time and the way you shared so eloquently and so openly about such painful experiences. It was a real treat.
Oh, thank you, Jer. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on your amazing podcast. And I appreciate your friendship as well.
All right. Well, we're done. That's it. Okay. Just did a podcast.
Amazing.
Oh my gosh. She is just amazing, is she not? What an inspiring, thoughtful, wholehearted individual, right? Padilla is sincerely one of the most thoughtful and talented humans that I know. And I've seen her work firsthand. I've actually lived in a house in the woods with her for 2 weeks while she was writing that book. And I helped coach her and edit her work. And she is just unlike any other person that I've ever met. The way that she has turned her tragedy into triumph, and the art that she creates, and the scale in which she dreams and executes her vision is just so inspiring to me. I highly encourage you to follow her online. You can find her on Instagram at unfuckyourself with no C, unfuckyourself. You can also follow her website, unfuckyourself.com, and check her stuff out. Her art, she is so talented, it's unbelievable. The work that she makes, the way her mind works, the stuff that she has on walls throughout Los Angeles is just beautiful. And I'm so grateful to know her, and I'm glad that you now know her as well. Thank you again for your time. I so appreciate your listening. I appreciate your support. If there's anybody you think that could use this episode in their lives, please do share it. Please do leave me a review. Please do tag me on social media. I love hearing from you. Any feedback or ideas are always appreciated. And don't forget, you know what? You're awesome. You're fucking awesome.